Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay on Thursday, November the 20th. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. Coming up, a couple have quit a pub and blamed the rising cost of living. Hear from the new man in charge of Sevenoaks Council after the leader quit. And Sir Mick Jagger has been back at his school in Kent. But first, the parents of a Kent baby who died after choking on pasta at nursery have described a six-figure settlement as the end of a long road. Nine-month-old Oliver Steeper was fed chopped-up penne bolognese by a member of staff at Jelly Beans in Ashford, despite not being weaned onto solid food. His parents have been campaigning to improve safety standards in childcare settings, while Oliver's dad, Lewis, has been speaking to Lucy.
It's been a long 4 years coming, to be honest, but we're so glad, you know, we can put this legal chapter behind us. The settlement obviously came without liability, but you know, I think if you read the facts for yourself over the years, it says everything you need to know. We're just glad that, you know, like I say, we can put this behind us now and move forward with the charity and be positive.
Does it feel symbolic in a way that you've reached this point now with the nursery giving you this settlement?
Yeah, it does, because obviously we've been through so much stress, emotion, you know, roller coaster, out of one investigation where we think that's it, and then straight into another, and having to relive the facts, you know, on a day in, day out basis at some point, you know, and it's kind of that stress has almost been lifted now, so it's kind of, you know, we can move forward now. And hopefully enjoy, you know, life a bit better without having to worry what's the next thing that's going to come up.
And I know you didn't want to go into specific details about how you're going to spend the money, but what kind of difference will it make for you and your family? Because, of course, you've got a young son now as well.
Absolutely. You know, and I think no amount of money is ever going to bring Oliver back. But certainly, you know, with the settlement money, we can use that to, you know, to help give Jake a better future going forwards now, and, you know, and provide a bit of security to us and Jake going forward.
How difficult has it been? I know you've mentioned, obviously, all these various investigations and you know, 4 years later, it must have been such a tough struggle for you and Zoe.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it certainly brought us closer together as a couple, you know, and obviously Jake was born into that as well. And, you know, bless him, he still has no idea. But every time he now sees a picture of Ollie, he's like, Ollie, you know. So, yeah, but he doesn't understand the connection. So that'll come at a later date. But I think, you know, like having now being clear of all the investigations and having this settlement, you know, we can, as I say, we can move forward and we can, you know, create our little family and move forward in the best way possible.
And I know you've both been campaigning for better safety standards in nurseries. Can you tell me a bit about that and how that campaign's going?
Yeah, absolutely. So we very early on, we realised, you know, things weren't right within that nursery. So we wanted to make change and make headwind and try and go to the government to ask them to change. And, you know, it was only with the help of the coroner in the inquest that she issued the prevention of future death notices. Thankfully, the government took that on board and we've now successfully managed to get change, you know, rules and regulations around choking, around weaning and the first aid. So that for us was almost life changing because, you know, we know Ollie's death now has made waves and hopefully, you know, safeguarded other children and it's just such a warm feeling knowing that Oliver has managed to change things to protect children out there, you know, on a national scale as well. You know, every child now has to adhere to these, or everyone working with a child has to adhere to the new regulations. And that's, you know, really touching. And we're just thankful Oliver's short little life has made a difference.
At an inquest in May last year, Coroner Katrina Hepburn heard evidence that the level of first aid provided by the nursery staff was overall of a poor standard. She wrote to the government and ministers introduced reforms that came into force in September, which include making sure there is always a staff member in the room with a valid paediatric first aid certificate while children are eating.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today, and a person's been charged following a stabbing on Romney Marsh. Two people were taken to hospital after the alleged assault at Brenzett Green on Monday morning. An 18-year-old has appeared in court. Another remains in custody. Three others have been released on bail. A hearing's underway following the death of an inmate at a prison on Sheppey. Josh Tarrant was on remand at HMP Elmley when he went into cardiac arrest and passed away in the early hours of November the 1st. An inquest has been told the 34-year-old had suffered a psychotic episode the previous day and was restrained by prison staff who tried to move him to a safe cell. The hearing's expected to last 4 weeks. Now, a couple who run a pub in Northfleet say they're having to leave after 16 years because of rising costs and financial pressures. Val and Janine Buzatu took on Ye Olde Leather Bottle in 2009 and became official licensees in 2020. They've recently seen a drop in footfall, though, and their rents increased from £32,000 to £47,000 in the space of 5 years. Well, Chloe Brewster from our colleagues at KMTV has been chatting to Val and Janine.
This pub has been like our main goal. We saw potential in the community, you know, so we gave a go. We started from the ground up when we come here. You know, we introduce food, we introduce carvery and so on, events. And yeah, it was just the perfect working relationship between me and my wife. So, yeah.
It must have been a big jump, obviously, going from having, presuming not have much pub experience to running one yourself. How was that?
Well, I've always worked in pubs, always been front of house. So it was just to take the jump to do it ourselves, like to move on and like not be, be our own bosses type thing. I don't like town pubs, high street pubs as they call them. I like community because community it looks after each other. You know, it's like they're coming. You always know someone that can help you out or whatever. And then when it comes to doing charity events, it's like everyone chips in. It's like we've done a charity, didn't we, for Treetops. So we did a big charity walk from Westminster Bridge to here.
Yes, yeah,
29 miles, I think.
Lots of events, over the years.
This has been our home we love it here. This has been our home for the last 16 years, and it's just a shame that we've had to say goodbye. You know, it's not our fault. It's the downfall of the economy. It's the downfall, the footfall coming round here now. No one goes out no more. And then you had COVID, didn't we? And we had Eat and Help Out. That was all okay. Yeah. But then a lot of the old people didn't want to come out no more. They got used to staying in and they were scared of coming out. A lot of the youngsters don't come out no more either. It's too expensive for them.
And then the cost of living hit, and it hit us really hard, especially like pubs and small business areas that they focus only on one venue, trying to grow there. Like, not like a chain of pubs or anything like that. It just puts so much pressure on us here in the last few years.
Our rent here is diabolical. For the footfall we get here, we don't even make the rent each week. It's ridiculous. And like we had our savings, we've used all our own savings to keep these doors open because we didn't want to keep the doors shut. But it's got to the stage now, we've got to go, we can't do it no more. We've got no money, nothing.
It's sad because some of the customers, they obviously don't want us to go over and stuff like that. And they're in a limbo now that they don't know what's going to happen with the whole community, the group of friends that they have, because they get work from here and stuff. And it's just a situation that it's occurring now. It's just sad.
Stonegate Group say the pub will be temporarily closed today while it's handed over to new management and will reopen at 3 p.m. tomorrow.
Kent Online reports.
A mum from Lydd has paid tribute to her truly remarkable teenager following her death. Leah Bishop was found in her bedroom at her home in Ladefort Crescent in November last year after taking an overdose of prescription medication. An inquest has heard how the 14-year-old had struggled with her mental health. A coroner concluded Leah died by suicide. If you are affected by issues around suicide, you can call Samaritans for free on 116 123. That's 116. 01646123. A man's been arrested following reports of a sex attack at a Tesco in Raynham. Two teenage girls were allegedly touched over their clothes in the Longley Road store on October the 30th. A 33-year-old man from Gillingham has been detained. Now, a Kent councillor has criticised a Reform UK MP after he said it was insane for some pupils to wear ear defenders in class. Richard Tice was asked in a press conference what should be done to tackle what he describes as the colossal overdiagnosis of children with conditions like ADHD. Well, this is what he had to say.
From the experts and the teachers that I've spoken to and the officers, the best thing to do actually is to push it, almost all of it, back to the schools. The schools know best, the teachers know best, and to stop labelling people, just say you need a bit of extra support, you might need a bit of extra time. You've got to the mad situation now where children who don't have any form of label are now starting to feel left out. They're feeling that, in inverted commas, they're the normal minority. This is insane. And that it's becoming a sort of school joke. And I just raise one more point. The sight of children in classes wearing ear defenders. I'm sorry. This is just insane. It's got to stop. The teachers want it to stop. The heads want it to stop. It's not the right way forwards. And I just repeat, the simple conclusion, the simple overall summary, is that outcomes are getting worse. And there's, in a sense, the reason why a trial is probably the right way to go is actually, given where it's got to, much better to try something for a year, 18 months, see what's working and what needs tweaking, than take ever more years before coming up what you think is the perfect legislation. And that's our offer to the government.
Now, Helen Whitehead is deputy leader of Thanet District Council and was diagnosed with autism in her 30s. She's also been known to regularly wear ear defenders at council meetings. Well, she's been speaking to Lucy, who started by asking what difference those ear defenders make to pupils who are neurodivergent.
It can make the difference between being able to access a classroom and not being able to access a classroom. My son is also autistic. It took 5 years to get him the specialist support that he needed. When he was within a mainstream classroom, he frequently used ear defenders and headphones because it was initially the only way that he could access the classroom. Ultimately, his sensory needs mean that he needs a higher level of specialist input. But for many students who are neurodivergent, the only way they're going to be able to access mainstream classrooms is with disability supports that help to reduce the sensory input, because it is quite literally an overload otherwise. So it enables us to be in the places that we want to be and supports us to be able to function the way we want to.
I suppose for someone who doesn't know and who might walk into a classroom and see a child with ear defenders on, they might jump to the conclusion that they're not listening to the teacher, they're not learning, but that's not the case, is it?
No, and schools work very hard to make sure that students who do have to utilise disability aids are able to access classes, have support to do so. And that's really, I think, where we should be focusing in terms of, do we have the funding for support? We often don't. How we enable that, how we support mainstream schools to support children with additional needs, and how we normalise the use of disability aids rather than pointing at them as something that shouldn't be there or shouldn't exist. Yeah, the only way that you're going to remove the usage of ear defenders or noise cancelling headphones from educational settings is if autistic people are entirely separate from the rest of the educational system, which is not where many of us want to be. So it feels to me very much like we should be working towards normalising that as something that we see and something that we understand, rather than finding shocking that this happens in classrooms. I was a deputy head at an SEN school previously. I'm very used to seeing all kinds of disability aids within classrooms. And it's very surprising that the focus is on how do we remove that rather than how do we normalise and support that.
How does it make you feel that such a high profile politician has made these comments?
I think from a personal perspective, I mean, I've been in a political role for 6 years, well, over 6 years now. And it is, I've always been very open about my autism. I've deliberately run as an autistic candidate to show that we are politically active and we are politically visible and that our presence should be normalised. But it still can be a very difficult and a very personal thing in terms of making invisible disabilities visible. So I will on occasion get comments about the fact that I wear noise cancelling headphones, and as you referred to previously, the idea that that means I'm not listening when actually it's the only thing that enables me to listen at various points. And so it's, I think, disappointing. And on a personal note, fairly distressing that something that I work to normalise, something that I work to make easier for the next generations on a very public platform has now been singled out as something odd and something that shouldn't happen and shouldn't be seen, because it effectively removes us from the population and says that what we are and who we are should not be visible. And I think the opposite, and I want to teach my son the opposite.
Thanks to Helen for chatting to the podcast. Reform UK has been asked for a comment.
Kent Online reports.
Plans for the first 300 of 550 homes planned for land in Ashford have been submitted to the council. Developers first came up with the idea of Kings North Green covering 126 acres of land back in 2015. Outline approval of the project was granted 3 years later, but some residents have questioned if the houses are still needed. Well, a decision's expected to be made in January. Now, it's been revealed there are no plans in place yet to fix a section of the A299 Thanet Way, which has been left full of bumps. A 50-mile-per-hour speed limit's been in place between Dargate Services and the Roman Galley after the road surface became warped in the summer. Well, Kent County Council have blamed the changing nature of the underlying ground conditions and say they're exploring options to resolve the issue. Meantime, a £50 million contract has been agreed to maintain and improve Kent's roads. Ringway will be responsible for winter gritting, fixing potholes and dealing with drainage problems. They'll take over from the current contractor next April. Bosses at the County Council say the deal delivers great value for taxpayers. Staying with local government, because the Conservative leader of Sevenoaks District Council has resigned following months of pressure. Roddy Hogarth stepped down and fellow Tory Kevin Maskell is the new leader of the authority. It's after nine Conservative councillors resigned, forming a new group of independents and launching a vote of no confidence. Bosses in Swale have spent £18,000 installing fencing around a park in a bid to stop travellers moving onto the land. It's at Milton Recreation Ground near Sittingbourne and has been put in place after three separate incidents over the summer. Council bosses say it will save taxpayers' money in the long run. Vandals have been criticised for defacing a remembrance wreath outside a church on Sheppey. It was left at Holy Trinity in Queenborough by the Labour Party, but their logo was later scrubbed out. A local councillor has described it as disrespectful to those who fought for our country. Kent Vineyard has been listed as one of the very best in the world. Gusbourne, based in Appledore near Ashford, has been ranked 28th in the world's best vineyards list for 2025. Experts say their wines are a product of nature and know-how, time and patience. And finally, Sir Mick Jagger's been back to his former school in Kent to mark the 25th anniversary of a performing arts centre named after him. The Rolling Stones legend went to Dartford Grammar while living in nearby Denver. Denver Road. The Mick Jagger Centre cost £2 million to build and opened in 2000. And their anniversary will be marked with a series of performances and events. Well, Sir Mick has been speaking to our reporter, Alan Smith.
There's lots of new things about the school. There's a new recording studio. There's a new music room. All these things are great to see. And then I look the other way out the window and there's my old playground from when I was 11. So it's a combination of the new and the old, which is really interesting. Yeah. So it really brings back, obviously, lots of memories.
Fond memories?
Yeah, a lot of them. Of course, now they're tinged with the, rose glasses of time, you know. But I was trying to think of the fact, you know, it wasn't all last. And obviously, in your childhood school days were difficult, you know, there was a lot of pressure on you to succeed, and there still is, in, you know, because it's an exam driven system, even though this school has changed its the way that the A-levels are run, which I think is a lot better, and there's a lot of opposition to it because it's run with the IB exams now rather than the A-levels. And some of my children did IB, and so I know a bit about it. So I'm pleased that they're doing that. I've been doing that for a long time now. Mm-hmm. So that pressure is not quite there. The A-level pressure is not as heavy as it used to be. I don't know about the younger children, but it is a highly pressurized environment. But I think it's from looking around, there's a lot of smiling faces, and you know, I think they're having fun. Yeah.
I read somewhere that when you were here, you led a school dinner strike. Is that true?
Yeah, I was one of the leaders of the school. There was the food really was awful. I mean, you know, you've got to feed hungry kids are hungry, and you've got to feed them, you know, and they spend so much energy. I mean, I've got a young son and so much energy, and he won't eat his school lunches because of mine. So, you know, yeah, we got fed up with that. And even some of the staffs joined us because they had to eat the same thing. So we had a lot of support. And to be fair, we expected to get into a lot of trouble. And we were hauled in front of the head and assistant head. But they did have a kind of, you know, they asked us in the end, they asked us for our input, you know, for what was wrong and did we have suggestions. So it was quite successful. I'm sure the woman that ran it hated this, but yeah. I remember her name even now, Mrs. Bannister. But I mean, I felt a bit sorry for her in the end, but it had to be done.
When you come back to Dartford, do you ever go back to see your old family home in Denver Road, I think it was?
Denver Road was my first house, and then we lived in Wilmington. And I was hoping to do that this time, but I don't think we're going to have time because it's going to be dark and there's not going to be anything to see. So next time I will do that.
Now, you fund a project here to teach children music, the Red Rooster project. Is that important?
It's a dance project, really. It's more of a dance project based around this ballet called Red Rooster, which is the first ballet that was based on Rolling Stones tunes. And they're going to do it. Some of the younger children are going to do that today. So, yeah, I mean, I fund that. And I'll fund anything. You know, they asked me to do that, so I'm happy to do that yearly. So I'm very pleased it's still going.
Yeah. Back in March this year, Ned Sheeran led a campaign to persuade the government to put music more firmly on the agenda, school's agenda, the curriculum. I guess that you're behind that.
Yeah, I'm obviously behind that. It's not. It's something. Well. You know, English education is a bit of a mishmash generally on a national level because we've got so many different, each county has a different approach and each government has a new approach. And so we get lots of governments, get lots of education ministers, get lots of approaches. And, you know, we're lacking, music's lacking in schools. I mean, it's gone, I think the participation's really gone down in the last, say, 20 years. And the other thing that's gone down is languages this school, I think, is very good at languages. They teach a lot of languages. The school is a big take-up on languages, but that's not true of that many schools generally across the Great Britain. It's declining. So we're a monoglot country. You know, you go to other countries and everyone speaks English, and we only speak English. So I was lucky enough to get a pretty good French teacher here, and you know, I've gone on to be able to speak. I can speak French pretty good, but that was due to the school.
You famously met Keith Richards again on the platform at Dartford Station and then got together and that led to the Stones. What would have happened if one of you had taken a different train?
That's one of those 6 degrees of separation questions. You know, we probably met on another train. How about that? Or we met in that same club in Ealing where we put it, you know, the few blues enthusiasts of London all turned up there. So, yeah, I mean, that's very fortuitous, and I'm glad that happened. And Keith was great to me on one of my, I think it was my last birthday, and he gave me, framed the two records that I had, carrying on Dartford Station. That was very nice.
Kent Online Sports.
Rugby, and Kent Spennell and Alex Mitchell are both in the England squad for this weekend's Autumn International. The number 8 from Sevenoaks is due to start against Argentina, while scrum half Mitchell is on the bench. The game at Twickenham on Sunday kicks off at 4:10. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials, plus you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. Whilst you're on the website, you can also sign up to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. Whilst you're on the site today, don't forget to check out the latest Eat My Words food review. And do have a fantastic time if you're heading to the Christmas light switch on in Maidstone this evening. Our presenters Rob and Numi from KMFM Breakfast, our sister radio station, will be there doing the honours.
News you can trust. This is the Kent Online Podcast.